From Independence Mall in Philadelphia, this is NPR's Justice Talking.
I can't look at this world and not believe in a master creator. I don't need proof of creation. I believe it because I believe in God. I don't think there should be a problem teaching both sides.
Teachers feel quite intimidated. If evolution becomes controversial in their state or in their school district, they just quietly stop teaching it.
The way to get our students to understand evolution, whether they accept it or whether they find a better theory for the origin of life, would be to present it in a way that's exciting, that recognizes differences of opinion.
What we should be teaching students is to evaluate real controversies. Scientists are not arguing. We don't sit up late at night worrying about did evolution take place or not.
Coming up on Justice Talking, Margot Adler hosts a debate on creationism in the public schools. Justice Talking is a production of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. It's recorded before a live audience at Carpenter's Hall in Philadelphia.
Welcome to Justice Talking. I'm Margot Adler. Justice Talking takes an in-depth look at the cases and controversies that come before our nation's courts and challenge our nation's conscience. In this edition of Justice Talking, we'll look at creationism, evolution, and the controversy over what should be taught in the classroom. Since the days of the Scopes monkey trial, this contentious debate has captivated the nation. Recently, several states have passed laws that require evolution to be taught as theory, not fact, and some schools have even taken evolution out of the science curriculum. Just ahead, a debate between two advocates who feel strongly about this issue, law professor David DeWolf and Dr. Eugenie Scott of the National Center for Science Education. But first, Kansas Public Radio's Peter Hancock reports on the battle in Kansas.
At Highland Park High School in Topeka, Kansas, students are going through the spring ritual of taking a battery of standardized tests.
What are we testing on?
This year, much to the delight of some people and the chagrin of others, the Kansas statewide science tests will include questions about evolution, the Big Bang Theory, and other scientific concepts about the origin of the universe. But that's only because the new Kansas State Board of Education voted in February to put those concepts back into the state's science curriculum. In August 1999, the previous board voted by a narrow margin to adopt standards that did not include evolution. Steve Abrams, a leader of the faction that spearheaded that movement, said he simply does not think evolution represents good science.
I think it's important that students understand what good science is as far as being observable, measurable, repeatable, and falsifiable. And until that occurs, I think that we're leading them astray.
While conservative board members like Abrams tried to portray the controversy as one of good science versus bad science, for many ordinary Kansans, it was clearly a question of science versus religion. Jody Shogren is a member of the Intelligent Design Network, a group that wanted the state board to go even further by requiring schools to teach the religious-based theory that the universe is the product of an intelligent creator. She believes Darwinism gives an incomplete explanation of man's place in the universe.
It refers to humans as nothing more than soft machines. It equates human behavior to that of animals and implies that both are merely the products of natural selection.
But many others in Kansas and across the nation took the opposite view. At a public debate on the subject, Dr. Chris Krishtalka, a professor of evolutionary biology at the University of Kansas, insisted that intelligent design was simply a new name for the old idea of teaching the Bible as scientific fact.
Science only deals with natural explanations of natural phenomena, does not deal with the supernatural. And intelligent design is creationism in a cheap tuxedo.
Although the science standards that were adopted in 99 did not forbid the teaching of evolution or mandate the teaching of creationism, many viewed it nonetheless as a not-so-veiled attempt to protect religious values from intrusion by science. In fact, to many, the whole controversy seemed like a throwback to the famous Scopes monkey trial, where a Tennessee school teacher was charged with the crime of teaching evolution. A staged reenactment of that trial was performed at the University of Kansas, with actor Ed Asner playing the part of the evangelical lawyer William Jennings Bryan and James Cromwell playing Clarence Darrow.
And I'm perfectly willing that the world shall know that these gentlemen
have no other purpose than ridiculing every person who believes in the Bible.
We have the purpose of preventing bigots and ignoramuses from controlling the education of the United States, and you know it. And that is all.
While the Board of Ed's decision sparked serious academic debate in the state, it also became the source of endless jokes on late-night talk shows and editorial cartoons, and it spawned this parody by Kansas public radio station KANU's Imagination Workshop.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Kansas State Board of Education chorus.
You say you're teaching evolution. Well, you know, we don't want to preach the word. We've got a more creative solution. Well, you know, Darwin didn't make the world.
Many Kansans, however, had a hard time understanding what all the controversy was about. According to public opinion polls that were conducted at the time, the vast majority had no problem accepting both the biblical and religious teachings of creation. Rose House is among those who wants her children to learn about all the explanations of how the universe began.
I can't look at this world and not believe in a master creator. And I don't have a problem with it. I guess I believe it on faith. I don't need to have proof of creation. I believe it because I believe in God. I don't think there should be a problem teaching both sides.
A year after the board's controversial decision, evolution was the key issue in elections for the Kansas State Board of Education. After an expensive and often bitter campaign, moderates ended up winning 4 of the 5 open seats, enough to hand them a 7-3 majority when the new board took office. Almost from the moment they took office in January 2001, revisiting the science standards became the first order of business, and within a month, they adopted a revised version that put evolution and other scientific theories back into the standards. But the new standards that were adopted this year did not do a complete about-face from the anti-evolution document approved 18 months earlier. John Richard Schrock, a member of the committee that wrote the new version, admitted that the science community had been a bit too strident in the debate. He said that's why the new standards contain the following tolerance statement.
If a student should raise a concern in a natural science class that a teacher determines to be outside the domain of science, the teacher should treat the question with respect. The teacher should explain why the question is outside the domain of natural science and encourage the student to discuss this question further with his or her family, another appropriate source, unquote. That phrase is how Kansas biology teachers teaching today handle that situation.
So that would seem to settle the issue in Kansas, at least for the time being. But Kansas Education Commissioner Andy Tompkins says he thinks the controversy over evolution will be with us for a long time to come.
I know I've grown a lot in the last 2 years going through this, but I mean, I think there's some resolve right now, and I know a number of our board feels some resolution with this, but I think the issue in terms of people talking about it and what's going to happen is probably going to continue, not only in our state, but probably in other states also.
For Justice Talking, I'm Peter Hancock in Topeka, Kansas.
The dilemma over Darwin. Is evolution the best explanation for the development of life on Earth? Or should students be taught alternative viewpoints in their science classes? I'm Margo Adler, and I'm joined by two advocates who will debate this issue in this edition of Justice Talking. David DeWolf is a professor of law at Gonzaga School of Law in Spokane, Washington. A graduate of Stanford University and Yale Law School, Professor DeWolf has clerked for the Honorable Stephen Beislein of the Idaho Supreme Court. In addition to his teaching responsibilities, Professor DeWolf is a fellow at the Discovery Institute in Seattle, which advocates for the teaching of intelligent design in the schools. He has written a briefing book for public school administrators, Teaching the Controversy, Darwinism, Design, and the Public School Curriculum. Dr. Eugenie Scott is the executive director of the National Center for Science Education, a pro-evolution nonprofit science education organization. Scott holds a PhD in biological anthropology from the University of Missouri and has taught at the University of Kentucky, the University of Colorado, and in the California State University system. A nationally recognized proponent of church-state separation, Scott has consulted with the National Academy of Sciences and is a co-author of their book, Teaching About Evolution and the Nature of Science. Welcome, both of you, to Justice Talking. Let's begin our debate with opening statements from our guests, starting with Eugenie Scott.
The Kansas Board of Education, against the advice of Kansas scientists and teachers, deleted biological evolution, the Big Bang, cosmological evolution, and the age of the Earth from Kansas science standards. The really bad news is that Kansas is not an anomaly. Evolution is frequently under attack in school districts around the country. As was the case in Kansas, a religious ideology that confuses evolution with atheism is the foundation for such efforts. Biological evolution says that modern living things are linked through common ancestors. Like all of science, evolution is mute on ultimate cause. It can't say God did it or God didn't do it and still be science. Evolution is controversial only in the public, not among scientists. Should that scientific consensus change, then evolution will be discarded like any other disproven theory. But prospects for this are not high, and thus scientists and teachers continue to say, teach evolution. And only evolution. Don't confuse kids about the nature of science by pretending to them that ideas outside science are scientific. And don't confuse them about evolution by pretending that there is some body of evidence that disproves it.
Thank you, Eugenie Scott. Now an opening statement from David DeWolf.
Tonight we address an exciting question. How did the astonishing diversity and complexity of life come to be? More particularly, what do we tell America's public school students? Will we continue to tell them that this problem has been definitively solved by Darwin's theory of natural selection, or will they be allowed to learn about a growing body of dissenting scientific opinion? Many want to define this controversy as a conflict between science and religion, and treat any dissent from Darwinian orthodoxy as religiously motivated and therefore constitutionally forbidden. But this way of defining the issue is mistaken. The key dispute is not between science and religion, but among scientists who differ in their interpretation of the same scientific data. In fact, many scientists, including Darwinists like Will Provine, lament the dogmatically Darwinian presentation of this issue in biology textbooks. Biology textbooks do not present any evidence contradicting Darwinian theory, but many major fossil finds document what Time magazine has called the biological Big Bang, the Cambrian explosion, which sharply contradicts Darwinian predictions about the history of life. Finally, there is evidence for alternative scientific theories. Biochemist Michael Behe has argued that the irreducible complexity of molecular machines within the cell is best explained by intelligent design rather than by Darwin's designer substitute, the theory of natural selection. In summary, I hope to persuade you tonight that students should be permitted to hear the full range of scientific opinion about the origin of life.
Thank you, David DeWolf. Eugenie, you said a bit about what evolution is. I'm wondering if you could give us a quick thumbnail definition and also tell us what is a theory?
Evolution is the idea that the universe has changed through time, so it's really a statement about history. Biological evolution, which seems to be the most contentious aspect of evolution, specifically is the idea that living things shared common ancestors, that there's this genealogical relationship among species, including our own. Theory is a word that is a term of art within science that's used specifically with a specific meaning that's different from how the word is used on the street. Theory in science means a logical construct of facts, laws, hypotheses, tested ideas that explains a natural phenomenon. So the synonym for theory is explanation. Theories are the most important things we have in science because they explain laws, they explain facts, they explain nature.
David, you're advocating for the inclusion of what you call intelligent design. What exactly is it, and how does it differ from what's been called creation science?
Very good question. Creation science has been considered by the courts as a biblically based explanation for how life came to be. It essentially looks at the account that's contained in Genesis and tries to find evidence in the fossil record, in geological formations, and so forth, to substantiate that account.
What we are proposing is to follow the same method that scientists follow in other areas. For example, in looking for life in outer space, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, we look for patterns of information, patterns of intelligence, patterns that are not found as a result of random chance. If we apply that methodology and look at the cell, if we look at biological systems, we find that same pattern of design or intelligence, and therefore we suggest that scientists following where the evidence leads them will conclude that there is definite evidence of intelligent design in biological things.
Now, some people would say that intelligent design is just another way of framing creationism, so it can be taught in the schools given the constitutional situation.
Well, I think the Supreme Court in Edwards versus Aguilar, which is the leading case in this area, made it very clear that while they were not happy with the particular way in which that presentation was made and its motivation, they were clear that competing scientific theories should be permissible in the school.
You wouldn't be surprised to hear me say, Dave, that I take a slightly different tack on this. When you examine the writings of the intelligent design people, you basically find that they echo ideas that were presented back in the early 80s. There's not a heck of a lot new here, except back then they called it creation science. With the court decisions between the Edwards decision and, of course, the McLean decision earlier, mentioning the C word, any kind of form of creation, creator, creationism, becomes really obviously religious advocacy, so you have to wash out as much religion as possible. So what I see in intelligent design theory is basically creation science with the more obvious religious aspects washed out.
I'm wondering, since we started with some of the legal questions, what are the constitutional issues at stake here? Why don't you start, Eugenia?
The issue of creation and evolution has, since 1925 and the Scopes trial, hung on the nature of the Establishment Clause. The Establishment Clause of the Constitution says that Congress shall make no laws requiring an establishment of religion or inhibiting the free exercise thereof. So what that means is that public institutions like schools have to be religiously neutral. They can't advance religion. They can't inhibit religion. The courts have been very consistent that teachers cannot bring their religious views into the classroom. The court has very, very consistently said creationism is inherently a religious idea. It cannot be presented as factual. You can talk about it just like you can talk about any religious ideas. You can talk about Islam. You can talk about Buddha. You just can't say Buddha was right. Okay, you have to be religiously neutral. And teaching that God created everything at one time in its present form, as opposed to the way I defined evolution of common ancestry of living things, that is establishing a religious idea.
David, a few basics that I'm interested in knowing. Should evolution be required in the science curriculum?
Students should learn about evolution because evolution is a theory that has had a huge impact upon both culture as well as science. But teaching about evolution is different from teaching evolution as though it were a proven theory. And just as we, I think, would not want to have a teacher who taught global warming as a theory without admitting any possibility that it was other than the truth with a capital T, I think we would be remiss if we allow teachers to present the anti-design theory of the origin of life as though that were the only viable scientific theory.
Eugenie, there are a lot of scientific theories that are not taught in schools. Quantum physics, for example, is not taught. Certainly, a lot of it isn't taught in high schools
most
and grammar schools. Why do you single out evolution? Why is evolution so important?
Evolution is one of those basic organizing theories of science, particularly the sciences of astronomy, geology, biology, and anthropology as well. Evolution makes biology makes sense because it gives you a foundation to tie together so many different observations and understandings that we have about how biology works.
How do you respond to that?
Well, there are three different senses of evolution, and one of the difficulties is that these are constantly being used interchangeably, and they're not interchangeable. If evolution simply means change over time,
I don't think anybody would doubt that evolution has happened and evolution continues to happen. We observe change in the world. A second meaning of evolution is that species or individual organisms change in response to their environment. That if you breed dogs or if you have a cold snap or a drought or some other feature, it's going to change the population and the characteristics within that population. That, too, is uncontroversial. The only part that's controversial is this notion of common descent or of random variation in natural selection, that explains the existence of variety and complexity.
You know, one of the things to remember is that the idea that living things shared common ancestors was accepted far more readily than Darwin's mechanism of natural selection when Darwin wrote The Origin of Species back in 1859. And it wasn't until we understood the genetic underpinnings of natural selection theory that the whole thing was able to be given a much firmer support. But there is so much biology that only makes sense if living things shared common ancestors.
You're listening to Justice Talking. Our debate on evolution, creationism, and intelligent design continues after this short break.
Surfing the web? Point your browser to the Justice Talking website at www.justicetalking.org. You can listen to all of our programs, read about our guests, and find links to more information about the hot issues we're debating. That's www.justicetalking.org.
Welcome back to Justice Talking. I'm Margot Adler. We're joined by two people who have different views about science education. Eugenie Scott believes that evolution is the only legitimate theory about the development of life. David DeWolf believes that there are other scientific explanations that should be included in a science curriculum. David, since most people believe both in evolution and in God, certainly from the polls, what's the problem with teaching evolution in school and intelligent design in Sunday school?
Well, because intelligent design is not a theological doctrine, it's a scientific theory. It belongs in the science curriculum as much as any competing theory about labor unions belongs in a history class or any other controversy that students learn about. I think one of the values of presenting this in an open-minded way, frankly recognizing that people have strong feelings and that these involve worldview questions, is that it gives us a chance to teach students how to take a difficult issue, understand a viewpoint with which they disagree, learn how to use evidence to defend or discuss that point of view, and still learn how to treat other people with respect.
David, one of the hallmarks of science is that theories can be tested and proven wrong, that they're falsifiable. Can you do that with your theory of intelligent design?
Absolutely. Now, I think you have to look at the difference between experimental science, like the theory of gravity, where we can drop balls and repeat that experiment as often as we like to test whether our theories are correct, and historical sciences, where we're trying to figure out the cause of some event in the past. We don't have the same ability to experiment on the past that we have with respect to the theories of gravity. But what we do is we look at the evidence that supports or contradicts a theory, and we try to infer the best explanation for that evidence. And that's just as true of Darwinian theory as it is of intelligent design.
Eugenie, can one be a scientist and a creationist at the same time?
Certainly. Small c creationist. Most Christians believe God created. God doesn't have to create everything all at one time in its present form, which is what special creation theology says. In fact, the special creation theology, which is at the heart of creation science, and I would say at the heart of intelligent design theory, is a minority view within Christianity. Catholics and mainline Protestants believe that God used evolution to bring about his purpose. And many scientists agree with that.
Now I'd like each of you to pose a question to your opponent. First, Eugenie Scott, your question for David DeWolf.
Well, David, I'm glad you brought up the issue of intelligent design theory as science, because it's got to be science if it's going to be worthy of being taught in the public schools. My question for you is, why don't intelligent design creationists publish in refereed scientific journals if intelligent design creationism actually is a true scientific alternative to evolution?
Well, first of all, any developing theory has difficulty getting accepted where people are already invested in its competitors. Also, what you have in scientific journals is the evidence. For example, Bruce Alberts, who is president of the National Academy of Sciences, wrote an article talking about how molecular machines look like they were designed. They look just like things that human beings have made. He didn't take the next step to say, could we infer from that that in fact they were designed? But the evidence is there. Perhaps the term intelligent design isn't there, but the evidence is.
You know, you say that it takes time to establish a new idea. Intelligent design theory has been around for almost 20 years, and it has never taken off, partly because these people do not take their views to the scientific community. The idea of punctuated equilibrium came on the scene and was a new idea. It overthrew some earlier ideas. I know within 4 or 5 years, I was teaching it to my students. If an idea is good, it'll get accepted. Intelligent design creationism hasn't made the grade.
David DeWolf, your turn to ask a question of Eugenie Scott.
Eugenie, suppose you were advising a school board that has a biology teacher, let's call him John Spokes. Spokes wants to teach the full range of scientific opinion on the origins issue. What would you allow him to teach? Then I'll give you some possibilities. First, can he criticize errors in the textbook, such as Haeckel's embryos or the outdated claims about biochemical evolution? Secondly, can he point out errors of omission, things like the Cambrian explosion or other evidence that contradicts the Darwinian paradigm? Third, may he inform students of evidence for alternative theories, such as Michael Behe's argument that intelligent design is a better explanation for the complexity of cells?
The whole notion of what do you teach at the high school level is something many people don't understand. High school teachers are not researchers. They are not paid to be on the cutting edge of development of knowledge. They are paid to take the consensus view of a discipline, whether it's history or science or literature, and communicate that efficiently and effectively to students. These ideas of irreducible complexity and some of the other ideas have not stood the test of science. If they ever do, fine. They will naturally be taught. But it's much, much too early to assume that these are going to make the grade.
I may respond. One of the questions about the way biology is taught, again, the way to get our students to understand evolution, whether they accept it or whether they find a better theory for the origin of life, would be to present it in a way that's exciting, that recognizes differences of opinion.
I couldn't agree more. And as soon as the teachers want to spend an entire year getting the kids up to speed in astronomy, biochemistry, comparative anatomy, and geology, and physics so that they can understand the arguments, that'd be great. But then the entire curriculum gets turned into evolution.
But wait a minute, Eugenie. Don't critics have a point when they charge that evolution is sometimes taught dogmatically as irrefutable truth? And don't you think children should be taught to think critically about evolution?
Oh, I think students should be taught to think critically about a whole bunch of stuff. But I think you should choose your targets. Do we really want kids thinking critically about heliocentrism versus geocentrism? Does the Earth go around the sun or the sun go around the Earth? What we should be teaching students is to evaluate real controversies. There is not a real controversy over whether evolution took place. scientists are not arguing. We don't sit up late at night worrying about, did evolution take place or not? What we argue about is, what's the pace of evolution? How important is natural selection? We don't argue about whether living things shared common ancestors.
So, Eugenie, should students be penalized for not believing in evolution in class?
Oh, of course not. I mean, I don't believe in evolution. I don't think anybody should believe in evolution. You should accept evolution if you find the data and theory compelling. But whatever happens at the high school level, you should learn it so that you understand it. I don't care if a student accepts it or not. That's the kid's own business and his parents, I suppose.
Should teachers be penalized for expressing their doubts if they have any?
I think that it's a matter of professional competency. If you had a history teacher who was teaching that, well, you know, those Holocaust revisionists are right. Maybe the Holocaust was really just a Jewish plot and it didn't actually happen. They used those ovens for sterilizing clothes. Would that be a competent history teacher? Most people would say no. This teacher does not have a right to encourage doubts about standard World War II history. And frankly, if you go to the universities, the attitude that evolution didn't happen is about on the same par.
You're listening to a Justice Talking debate on religion and science in the classroom. Educator Eugenie Scott believes teaching creation science is unconstitutional.
Evolution is controversial only in the public, not among scientists. Should that scientific consensus change, then evolution will be discarded like any other disproven theory. But prospects for this are not high, and thus scientists and teachers continue to say, teach evolution, and only evolution.
Attorney David DeWolf believes theories other than evolution belong in science class.
Many want to define this controversy as a conflict between science and religion and treat any dissent from Darwinian orthodoxy as religiously motivated and therefore constitutionally forbidden. The key dispute is not between science and religion, but among scientists who differ in their interpretation of the same scientific data.
Justice Talking is made possible with support from the Annenberg Foundation, the Deer Creek Foundation, and the Pew Charitable Trusts, investing in ideas, returning results. www.pewtrusts.com. Our Justice Talking debate continues with Margot Adler.
This is Justice Talking. I'm Margot Adler. If you're just joining us, we're having a debate on creationism and evolution. Should schools be required to teach evolution as the only legitimate theory about the development of the world? Or should creation science or intelligent design be taught as comparable theories? Our guests are Eugenie Scott and David DeWolf. Let's take some questions now from our audience here at Carpenter's Hall.
Hi. Mr. DeWolf, I may be mistaken, but I'm in a circle now. I find myself in a circle where I am actually getting information from a lot of creationists. It's not necessarily my bent, but I hear a lot about it. And you are the most deferential person I've heard in terms of intelligent design, because up until now I have never heard anything but a Christian, God created the earth in 7 days, and that's it, point of view.
Well, who I represent is the Discovery Institute, which is a collection of scientists and lawyers and public policy makers. I can't speak for everybody who disagrees with Darwinism, but our point of view is distinctly one of trying to get better science. I think some ideas that other people hold are nutty. They think some ideas I hold are nutty. But it seems to me part of what we need to learn in science class is how to speak to other people who hold strong views, but this is the key difference. I don't want to go to the Bible. I want to talk about evidence. Now, there may be evidence to support certain theories that find their way into the Bible, but the focus in a science class has to be on what is the evidence? What are the fossils? What do we see in cells, etc.?
I want to thank you, Dr. Scott, for coming here tonight. Your political rhetoric makes me a little uncomfortable. I think you're dancing around the real issue, and that is the existence of a personal God. The biblical account of God as the creator, who eventually sent his son to the world because he cared about this world, paints a picture of a very personal God. You talked about the repression of religious expression in the schools. However, evolution must be tied to faith because at some point, even ignoring the huge gaps that exist in the theory, you've got to believe in some other force that started the Big Bang or wherever it came from.
The idea that evolution is a religion is one that is remarkably common in the public. Evolution is no more religious than any other idea in science. I would be happy if the public schools would teach science as science and leave both Christian religion and anti-religion out of it. I would like students to be given the evidence for what happened and to be taught that science is limited to explaining the natural world using natural causes. Not because science is anti-religious, but just because it works a whole lot better if we don't allow ourselves to say God did it.
Let's take another question.
Question for Dr. DeWolf here. You had said that you agreed with the idea that intelligent design is a falsifiable view and that this is something that is a hallmark of science as you see it. And you've agreed that intelligent design rejects the idea of the short 7-day creation and so on as a kooky idea and so on. But I wonder if you really would agree that if intelligent design is scientific in the way that you claim, that if it is indeed shown to be false, that you would agree then that there is no God?
First of all, intelligent design doesn't reject the idea of a 7-day literal creation, but it doesn't really have anything to say on that point. That is, within the Discovery Institute that I represent, there are what we call young earth creationists who believe in this 7-day pattern. I'm not one of them. But again, the methodology is looking for scientific evidence that bears on this question of whether there is or is not design. Now, what you're saying is if we proved that there wasn't intelligent design, that would lead to the conclusion that there is no God? Was that your question?
I thought your claim was that intelligent design as a falsifiable theory would be something where one could disprove that there was intelligent design. Therefore, I'm wondering if you're saying that that would prove there is no God. Because, of course, Will Provine, who you cite, likes your way of putting this forward because, of course, he thinks that that's exactly the conclusion that students will come to if they look at the evidence.
Let me say there are metaphysical implications for both design and the lack of design. If there is no design, it casts doubt on whether there is a supernatural origin for things. On the other hand, if there is an intelligent designer, it creates the possibility that that's consistent with what various religions teach about the origin of the world.
Eugenie, what are the challenges that teachers are facing in all of this? How do teachers explain evolution to children whose parents are teaching them that God created the heavens and earth?
This is almost a moot point because what I find when I travel around the country and talk to teachers is that there's very little evolution actually being taught. Number one, teachers feel quite intimidated. If evolution becomes controversial in their state or in their school district, they just quietly stop teaching it. Easiest thing to do is just make it clear to the student that his acceptance or rejection of evolution is his own business, and that's fine with the teacher. After all, the whole goal of education is instruction, not indoctrination. But you do have to learn evolution in order to be an educated person. So learn it, pass the test, and you can disbelieve it if you want to.
I'd like to go back into the audience and take some more questions. I've heard that there are a couple of biology teachers in the audience. If they happen to have been among those whose hands were raised, I'd love to call on them first.
I'd like to ask Mr. DeWolf how he defines intelligent design, especially the intelligent part. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, whenever you see a designed system, if you look at an automobile or you look at Mount Rushmore or you look at an object that has been designed, you infer from that that there was an intelligence that arranged the parts so that they're functionally interrelated and that the system operates as a whole. Every time we find design, we find an intelligence that was responsible for that design.
Why can't the intelligence be natural selection?
Because by definition, natural selection is not intelligent.
Why not? Define what you mean by intelligent.
Well, at least it's defined by people like Richard Dawkins, who are the leading exponents of the Darwinian theory of natural selection. It is purposeless, randomized, and that it has no purpose toward which it's going. They consistently repeat the fact that we have to get past the idea that somehow these entities know what they're doing or know where they're going.
I think that's a mistake. I don't believe Mr. Dawkins says that at all. What Mr. Dawkins says, and what I believe as a biologist, is that the variations upon which natural selection exerts its action are random in occurrence. But natural selection in causing or in leading to greater adaptation of an organism to its environment is hardly purposeless.
You're listening to Justice Talking, and we're talking about evolution. Do alternative theories to evolution belong in science class or religion class? Our debate between Eugenie Scott and David DeWolf continues after this short break.
Support for National Public Radio comes from National Public Radio stations and the Freedom Forum, creator of the Newseum, the first interactive museum of news, located in Arlington, Virginia, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Annie E. Casey Foundation, supporting families and neighborhoods by funding initiatives aimed at helping disadvantaged children, and the Ford Foundation, a resource for people and institutions worldwide. This is NPR, National Public Radio. To order a CD or transcript of this program, visit our website at www.justicetalking.org or call 215-573-8828. You can also get the entire show from the web at audible.com/justicetalking.
Justice Talking, I'm Margo Adler. We're joined now by Frank Newport, editor-in-chief of the Gallup Poll. The news has recently been full of stories about attempts to downplay evolution in the public schools and science curriculums in various states. What are American attitudes toward the teaching of evolution and the teaching of creationism, creation science, and the like?
Well, I think it's fundamentally important, Margo, to realize that a lot of Americans believe in creationism. Based on how Gallup has asked it over the years, it's really a split. About half of Americans believe kind of a classic evolutionary position, but that leaves about half of Americans who believe that we being human beings, were created pretty much in our present form 10,000 years ago, which is what creationists generally think. With that in mind, then, it's not surprising that we find in our polling that the majority of Americans do favor teaching creationism along with evolution in public schools.
I would imagine that this is one of those questions that really depends on how you ask it.
To some degree, it does. I think the creationism versus evolution issue, we've gotten that in several different ways, and we consistently find that Americans believe in creationism, asking it many different ways. The issue of teaching it in public schools does vary a little. I can give you an example. One way we asked it was, do you disfavor teaching creationism along with evolution? And that's 68% who say yes. Slightly different variant when we say, teaching creationism instead of evolution, the number drops down to just 40%. So it's clear that Americans want both of them, not just creationism. But on the other hand, it looks like a majority are perfectly content to force teachers to mention, talk about, teach creationism at the same time they give the traditional biological theory of evolution.
Do you see a wide variation depending on region and religion? My immediate thought would be that, for example, Jews have very different attitudes than evangelical Christians. The South has very different attitudes than the coast. College educated, different than high schools. Or am I wrong?
Good question. We never have enough Jewish respondents in any of our samples to break them out. It's about 2% of Americans, so in a typical sample of 1,000, that's about 20 people. So we really can't break those out. Yes, I think deeply committed conservative Christians would be more likely, for obvious reasons, to push the teaching of creationism. Education is an important dimension, and we do find less support for creationism among those, for example, with postgraduate degrees, but it's not strong. We still find a majority, even among those with college degrees, saying that teaching them both is okay as far as they're concerned.
Thank you so much for joining us. Frank Newport is editor-in-chief of the Gallup Poll. Thanks for being with us.
Our Justice Talking debate continues. Now back to Carpenter's Hall.
Welcome back to Justice Talking. I'm Margo Adler. We're having a debate on evolution between human biologist Eugenie Scott and law professor David DeWolf.
The basis of the intelligent design theory seems to be based around the fact that there is some kind of larger being that designed life functions. And so would that, in fact, be classified as a religion and just thus be prohibited?
Go ahead. My quick answer would be that implications don't make something religious. The implications of Darwinism don't make evolution a religion. That's been clearly established. But neither do the implications of intelligent design theory make it a religion either. That's my analysis of the constitutional law.
There's an awful lot of wink, wink, nudge, nudge going on here. I mean, you're not really saying that God had nothing to do with it. We're just looking for design out there, and it's poof, there it is. I mean, you know, we're talking God did it. I mean,
no,
that's, you know.
We're not saying that as a conclusion. Intelligent design says we don't know where the source of this came from. As scientists, all we know is that occasionally nature points beyond itself, and when it does is in the Big Bang theory or with respect to the information systems in living systems. We shouldn't hesitate to say that's where the evidence leads us, even though we can't go there in terms of saying what it is that created this.
But Mr. DeWolf, how is it then that most of what we hear on your side for purposes of okay. this discussion does come from groups, from people, from institutions that also want to promote other aspects of some sort of conservative Christianity or maybe even conservative Judaism or things like that? There's actually much more commonality between the two of you than I expected, and yet you still advance this notion that there is an intelligent design, which says to me, still, there must be an intelligent designer. And if that intelligent designer isn't a theological construct, I don't know what we're talking about then. I don't see how you can maintain that you're not aiming for some religious conclusion from this, because then we wouldn't have to have this whole discussion.
Your first question is, why haven't I heard this before? And the answer is, with all due respect to my journalistic friends and colleagues, it doesn't make for as exciting a presentation. The American Bar Association Journal ran an article on this, and they've got Darwin's Origin of Species and the Holy Bible as the two images to start the story with. This is the way the story is portrayed because, gee, when you get down to the science of it, it's far more complicated and when there's a lot more agreement. So, you know, actually understanding this may cut down on your ratings, and that's, with all due respect, the reason why in many cases we don't get a fair presentation of what the issue is.
Let me clarify. I didn't say that I hadn't heard it before. I said that the place that I at least hear it most often and most loudly, even stridently, is from conservative religious individuals and organizations. Well, so how come that's where I hear it?
Well, I'll tell you why, and that's because, I mean, my son just went through a biology program, and he was offended by the fact that in his biology class, his biology teacher was very clear that this is the way science is, and anybody who disagrees with this is a ding-a-ling. Now, I think it's understandable that people who typically are from a religious background who come at it from that point walk away being angry and motivated to say, who is he or she to essentially impugn my religious beliefs? Now, I think the solution for this, and I think Eugenie and I would agree on this point, is better preparation of teachers who teach this. And I would say the way to help them is to learn to teach the controversy, not to be better evangelizers for Darwinism, but to learn how to teach the controversy in a way that's respectful of views, but is also scientifically accurate.
Hello. First of all, I want to say that two people tonight said something about seven-day creation, and the Bible says six plus a day of rest, just to set that straight. Okay. Now, the other thing is, I went to 12 years of Catholic school in the Philadelphia area, and I remember the nun telling us, you know, that's a metaphor. God didn't make the world in 6 days like we know 6 days, because time means nothing to God, because God is eternal. Anyway, I guess I think that when I hear Christians talking about creationism or other theories, they sort of seem to be wanting to prove that God exists. And I guess I still see, that's why they call it faith and belief. It is outside of science. And I think that's the whole point of it. And I think that science does study, you know, biological life, and the soul is a matter for, you know, the Pope or the rabbi or anybody else who wants to comment upon it. And it cannot be measured in any laboratory.
The current biology textbooks and the standard way that biology is presented in the high school curriculum doesn't simply stop at saying, here's the evidence we have of change over time. The textbooks are very emphatic about emphasizing, we know how it happened. It happened through random variation and through natural selection, and by one species gradually changing its form, eventually the species changed into a brand new species, and that's how all species came into existence.
Why couldn't God do it that way? That's awesome.
It's possible he could. I don't have a theological problem with that. I have a scientific problem with it.
My question is for both of you, and it's somewhat related to the discussion you were just having. If I do accept that intelligent design is a scientifically based proposition, how, and we assume that we can't teach every single fringe scientific idea in our classrooms that comes down the pike, at what point or how do we go about determining when a scientific idea is no longer fringe and it has enough of a consensus and enough acceptability to be taught in our classrooms?
Well, this is a curriculum decision. We think that school boards have the difficult decision of, do we teach quantum mechanics? You know, how much of evolution do we teach? I think that evolution is an important issue. I think this debate is an important way for people to see the relevance of worldviews and of the relevance of scientific information, and frankly, to help defuse a bit of the cultural conflict here.
Well, teaching the controversy, as you suggest, David, ends up confusing the students about the nature of science and also about the science of evolution. If you want to get kids thinking critically and doing all those other important things that we want them to learn how to do, have them debate topics that are actually contentious within science. And whether evolution took place is not.
Our time together is coming to an end. It's time for Eugenie Scott and David DeWolf to make their final statements. First, Eugenie Scott.
Well, I'm certainly glad we solved this problem tonight. I think that the problem of the teaching of evolution and how much religion we allow into the public schools is not going to be resolved very swiftly. I think we need a much clearer understanding in our populace of the limitations of science and the strengths of science. Science is the best way of knowing that human beings have come up with to explain the natural world, but we have to limit ourselves to natural explanations. Whether there is or is not a supernatural explanation is not part of our job description. We have to restrict ourselves to natural cause And when we do that, we find that the evidence that living things shared common ancestors, the universe is old, etc., is extremely compelling. Now, individuals may have theological differences of opinion about that, and they are free to hold them, but that should not determine what we teach in the public school science classroom. That should be determined by the consensus view of teachers and scientists as to what is good science.
Thank you, Eugenie Scott. And now a closing statement from David DeWolf.
In the middle of World War II, Justice Jackson wrote for the United States Supreme Court on a case involving a flag salute. The state of West Virginia required students to say the Pledge of Allegiance in order to be in public school. And in rejecting the notion that they had a right to do that, he wrote, "If there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, it is that no official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion, or force citizens to confess by word or act their faith therein." We want to extend that principle to the teaching of the origins controversy. We believe that the experience of most people is when they listen to a debate like that, they say, gee, I wish my kids could listen in on this. I think they'd find it really stimulating and exciting. We believe that American public school students should have the opportunity to be participants as well as observers of this exciting area of scientific development, and that we can teach them about science respect for evidence rather than orthodoxy as the means by which we learn more about the natural world in which we live. Thank you.
Law Professor David DeWolf and Dr. Eugenie Scott, thank you both, and thanks to our audience here at Carpenter's Hall. I'm sorry that we didn't get to all of you. We close this edition of Justice Talking with this provocative thought from one of the founding fathers who grappled with the role of religion in public life, Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson wrote, "Fix reason firmly in her seat, and call to her tribunal every fact, every opinion. Question with boldness even the existence of a God, because if there be one, he must more approve of the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear. Do not be frightened from this inquiry by any fear of its consequences. Neither believe nor reject anything because other persons have rejected or believed it. Your own reason is the only oracle given to you by heaven." I'm Margot Adler. Thanks for listening to Justice Talking.
We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense.
Justice Talking is produced by the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Kathleen Hall Jamison directs the Policy Center. The executive producer of Justice Talking is Catherine Colbert. Senior producer Julie Drizin. Producer Cheryl Flowers. Associate producer Cara McGurk. Special thanks to the National Constitution Center and the Penn National Commission on Society, Community, and Culture for their sponsorship of this program, and to the Carpenters Company of the City and County of Philadelphia. From Independence Mall in Philadelphia, this has been Justice Talking. Justice Talking is made possible with support from the Annenberg Foundation and the Deer Creek Foundation, the Pew Charitable Trusts, investing in ideas, returning results, www.pewtrusts.com. Support for National Public Radio comes from National Public Radio Stations and the Freedom Forum, creator of the Newseum, the first interactive museum of news, located in Arlington, Virginia. The Ford Foundation, a resource for people and institutions worldwide. The Annie E. Casey Foundation, supporting families and neighborhoods by funding initiatives aimed at helping disadvantaged children. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.